the friendly manner to have helped galvanize things. But I, years before that article appeared, I was going to places, I would get invited to places who would say they wanted to know about this new practice model. And I had been, before ever Bob's article ever appeared, I was calling, in fact, I said, we need a medical society, well before I ever met Wynn or Bob, that this is growing. I would get the American Hospital Association directory out. It was a paper, sort of phone book-like document published every year. And I would hear somebody say, oh, yeah, I think there's this friend of mine from med school. He's somewhere in, Wisconsin, and I think he's around Milwaukee, and so I think he's doing the same thing. I don't know which hospital. I'd get that guide out, and I'd call the Milwaukee hospital and try to find that person, and I started finding people. People would say yes. So I started collecting this list of people, and I would ask them how much money you make, how hard do you work, do sort of a survey, and would you be interested in, us getting together? And essentially everybody said yes.
Yes.
So I didn't know how to start a medical society. So one idea I had was I started polling drug companies. The drug companies did not realize hospitals were around. They would invent a new hospital-related drug like an IV antibiotic, and off they would go marketing it to doctors who were often not practicing in the hospital very much anymore. And they never came and marketed it to me when I might have the opportunity to prescribe it or a competing drug hundreds of times every year. Never came to find me because they didn't know I was there. So I thought these drug companies should have a really powerful incentive to find all the nation's hospitalists. And they have a staff who could do it. They have people who go into all the hospitals. So we could partner together to do this. I would want to know who all these doctors are. I'd help explain to how you find the doctors, explain how these doctors practice. You, the drug company, go market to them. I would learn who all these doctors are, and we'd form a medical society. Things independently, too, and to try to find hospitalists. So I think the real thing that at least got SHM was an article that appeared in Internal Medicine News.
And who wrote that?
A woman named Joyce Friedan. So I always tell her, we used to see each other a lot, I haven't seen her in years, but I always tell her, she is the one who founded
Society.
The Society of Hospital Medicine, yeah. She connected Wynn and me.
So she interviewed both, she found both of you and interviewed both of you for her article?
Just me.
Oh, just you.
I didn't know Wynn at the time.
All right.
So, Wynn did send it to you.
Okay, great.
So it's that article where they talk about me having a hospital-only practice. Wynn saw my name and called and said, because in that article it says, I'd like to form a medical society.
All right.
I think we need to do that of all the doctors that do this, that practice this way. Wynn saw that and he called me. I was had actually been at work and remembered I was watching my neighbor's house and had forgotten to do something with his refrigerator. I don't remember, but realized I was going to, flood his kitchen or something. I don't remember, but I dashed out of work, drove home to my home and went to my neighbor's house. He was out of town and was on my hands and knees on the floor in his kitchen doing something with his fridge when I get this pager to call Dr. Whitcomb. So I pick up my neighbor's phone and, use his long distance. Time sort of meant something. I was, running up a bill for him.
Yeah.
Called Wynn back. So that was our first conversation. We said, hey, let's try to do this together.
All right. And this was before Bob's.
Yes.
Yeah.
This was before Bob's article.
Yeah.
Then Bob's article comes out, and Wynn and I both call him. And to Bob's credit, he took our calls and was, very engaging. He had been calling other academicians for more than a year to say, look, this is a new phenomenon. We need to do some research about it. And I'm not really a health services researcher. I can't really do this myself.
Yeah.
But it's a great topic. If we could partner together, I could explain the kind of the lay of the land, and you could, with your expertise and research methods, we could start investigating this.
Yeah.
Well, and the academicians were typically, I probably talked, 10. And most of them would get on the phone with me, but they would be like, wait a minute, who are you? You're like a regular doctor in a hospital I've never heard of in a non-academic setting, and you hadn't written any papers. What am I doing talking to you?
Tell me when you started doing this inpatient internist job, and maybe how did that come about?
And the short answer is I became a hospitalist for the same reason most people do today. But you should know that Wynn and I were not the first doctors in our respective practices.
Okay.
For one of us, we're not even the first hospitalists in the country. We weren't even the first ones in our own practices.
Okay.
So my scenario is that a friend in residency graduated residency a year ahead of me. He stayed in the same community where we trained in Gainesville, Florida, at the University of Florida. In that community, there was a local medical doctor, a family practice doctor who was sort of late career, still practiced kind of, be derogatory, but he was, sort of out of date, and he admitted, he
Charles Wilson, okay.
You might want to mention him.
Sure.
Because he was, you know, he was a pioneer. He just had never wanted to be active in SHM stuff, but he's still there in that same practice now, 24 years later. So this family practice doctor told Charles Wilson, look, you come out here, you don't have to worry about opening an office, you don't have to worry about the overhead, it'll be a simple business, you just show up, and I will refer all of my hospital patients to you. I have this many patients, let's do a back of the napkin, you can collect this much money on, you know, here's the economics of managing my patients in the hospital with very little overhead, you'd be able to make a reasonable salary.
Did the hospital weigh in?
Oh, the hospital didn't even know what was happening.
Okay.
So I sort of bristle over this. Our hospital, 6 years later, they didn't know what was going on. And we did it all for them. But I should also say, we didn't have the idea. I certainly didn't have the idea it was going to be more efficient for patients, or really save money, or do better on length of stay, or improve quality metrics. That certainly, I didn't know that that would be the case. I kind of worried it would be the opposite, that I didn't know these patients, therefore I was probably going to do repeat tests and different things.
All right, and this was 1987.
Charles Wilson started in 87.
All right.
And then I joined him in a year later in
1988.
Live 88. So what's interesting with Chuck, with Charles goes by Chuck, he, within weeks of starting to work there, taking care of the patients referred by this one FP, within even days, weeks, other doctors said, look, I don't want to take unassigned ER admissions. Will you take them for me? He said, okay, I'll do that. I'm here anyway. And then a few other doctors said, you know what? I don't really want to admit my own hospital patients either. Will you take care of this for me? He said, okay, I'll do that. So almost immediately,
yeah,
he was really busy. So within a few weeks, he starts calling me. He says, what are you doing next year? This is, you know, I'm still a resident. What are you doing next year? Because I could sure use help. If you want to join me, well, and so my situation was I did not want to go out and join a private internal medicine practice and build my own panel of patients because I thought that I would do an endocrine fellowship. I was looking for work just for a year or so. And people in my situation, there were plenty of us just like me, but the only options that were generally available were go work in an emergency room somewhere. And I didn't want to do that because the thought of intubating a child or that sort of thing terrified me. I didn't feel adequate. The other option for people in my category who didn't want to join a private practice was maybe stay on at the institution where you trained and work in the VA outpatient clinic.
All right.
Thing. And I didn't really want to do that. Hospital care. I felt like hospital care. I spent my whole rest doing hospital care. This is really a good fit.
And the default position was open an office and deal with all of the logistics of trying to...
Well, yeah, it's like committing to a marriage. If I could have gone out to town, presumably, and joined the big local private internal medicine group, I guess they would have had me. I never talked to them, but I suppose that was an option. That really is a marriage. I wasn't going to join them, and then a year later, or 2 years later, leave to go to a fellowship. It would have been horribly disruptive, terribly disruptive. But I knew if I joined Chuck, you know, and a year later I decided to leave, he could just, you know, somebody else could replace me. And that's still true for hospitals today. So that is still the line of reasoning that many people, when finishing their internal medicine residency, many people think the same way, and that's why they choose to become hospitals. So a year later I came out and I joined him. And we kept getting busier and busier. Nobody wanted hospital patients, basically. This was the 80s. So we were not put there by a managed care organization or the hospital. No one told us to go try to get the primary care doctor to quit coming to the hospital. So the hospitalist model tended to have that reputation in the late 90s. Oh, it was invented by managed care to save somebody money and to kick all these internists and family physicians out of the hospital.
And it was actually the opposite.
Because that was certainly not the case for us. We got busy because the other doctors begged us to.
Yeah.
We sort of had a, you know, our problem was we were always too busy, in my view. I was always one more referral away from collapse. So it never took the hospital executives or managed care executives trying to make this happen. It happened organically because the doctors wanted it. But that's often forgotten. People who are sort of critics of the hospital's model say, yeah, it was invented by a bunch of bean counters, money for somebody. Well, the bean counters, you know, eventually thought it was a great idea, but it certainly wasn't really invented by them.
Yeah.
The reason we have 30,000 hospitals today is because primary care physicians have chosen to leave the hospital, not because healthcare executives pushed them out. So I never make the claim I was the first hospitalist.
Right.
Reasons one, because Chuck Wilson was a year ahead of me.
So you the best you can be is second.
Yeah, at the very end, I don't even say that.
Because
it really doesn't have a single defined starting point. I mean, there were doctors in the 60s who just practiced at a hospital. They tended to be called the house doctors.
And they would have been employed by a hospital or by a medical group?
But they were usually lousy doctors who really were an underling to the other doctors on the medical staff. So the hospitalist model is not like that. So when it really started and who was first, I'm smart enough to know, no matter how big my ego is, that I would never make that claim.
Yeah.
Ours in Florida, ours is the first real hospitalist practice. It was one of them. But I will tell you, I tried to figure out the very first practice ever. I listened to people. So there was a pediatrician in Atlanta who years ago, this was probably about 96, I started explaining the hospitalist model to him that we had in our hospital in Florida. And he says, oh, you know what? In like 1968 in Atlanta, our pediatric group did the same thing.
Right.
So in fact, what is often lost is that pediatricians rushed to embrace this model even earlier than intern. It doesn't get much attention because, you know, there are just fewer pediatric cases, fewer children admitted to hospitals, fewer pediatricians doing hospital work. It's dwarfed by the number of interns and adult doctors that care for adults. But this group said, even in the 60s, they were very busy in the office and not very busy in the hospital. And so they realized they had sort of a Keystone Cops phenomenon with all of them dashing over to the hospital in the morning to make morning rounds, sort of wedging them, you know, through the door like the Keystone Cops, all running in at the same time, and bumping into one another inefficiently, and then all dashing back out to their car at the same moment to rush back to the office to start seeing their office. And so they said, why did we do that? Why don't we post one of us in the hospital for the whole day? So they essentially, as far as I can tell, I always tell people, as far as I know, that might be the first time the hospitalist model was adopted. Right. And the reason it got adopted was, here was a group of doctors who had relatively few patients in the hospital and lots of patients in the office. And it wasn't until about the 90s where that really became an issue for doctors to care for adults. By the mid to the late 90s, the typical internist had relatively few patients in the hospital and a very, very busy office. And that's when it dawned on them to say, man, why do I go to the hospital every day? But anyway, the earlier history, I don't even know the name of this group in Atlanta. I had tried to call medical societies. Wayne and I were trying to form a medical society. We were doing it out of our home. We didn't have a phone number or mailing address. I mean, so if we tell somebody, hey, we're starting a medical society, and they want to somehow engage around it, who do they call? What's the phone? What's the address? There's a website. We didn't have any of that stuff. And we were working full time, take care of patients, so it was hard to do all that stuff. So I had been calling medical societies, maybe even before Bob's article. I don't remember that for sure. And mostly they would say, well, that's interesting, and, you know, let's see how this goes. And so I called the American Society of Internal Medicine, the AMA, the American College of Physicians, even my local Alachua County Medical Society. And I would say, look, can you provide some office space? Can we rent some clerical time? Can we run a phone line into your office that someone would answer? Can we use your mailing address? So that didn't really go anywhere until the people at the American College of Physicians, I think, saw Bob's article, the journal, and Bob had a CME meeting, the first ever in-person gathering of hospitals. Should be on your timeline.
Yeah.
I think it was October of 97, maybe. And the ACP sent one of their lieutenants to that meeting, and I think he was impressed. Wow, there's a lot of people here. Wow, there's a lot of energy.
Yeah.
That word gets back to the ACP leadership, and not long after, Wynn and I get a call. Hey, we hear you're